IT security. This program may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Derek walks you through how to win government jobs and contracts, effectively manage your government career, and best utilize government services. Every week on Fed Access, you will learn about interesting federal agencies, workers, and jobs. Fed Access provides you the access you need to succeed in the federal government. And now your host, Derek T. Dorch.
Today on Fed Access, I'll be talking to Ellen Hertz, Director of the National Technical Information Service. In our two-part interview, I'll talk to Ellen about NTIS, its mission, her experiences going from the private sector to NTIS, careers at NTIS, and where the agency and the effective housing information that the government has is headed in the future. Ellen, thank you so much for coming on Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch. It's a pleasure having you. Talk to me a little bit about the National Technical Information Service, which you're director of, a unique agency. Not many people, I don't think, have heard about it. But tell us about your agency, NTIS.
I will. And thank you, Derek, because you're right. More people need to know about us. And part of my job is the outreach and making more people aware of what NTIS does. So let me start with the National Technical Information Service is a federal government group. We're part of the Department of Commerce. And our mission is to gather scientific and technical information from all over the government, regardless of which agency. If it's scientific or technical, our mandate is to gather it up, organize it in a way that it's more easily findable, preserve it for dissemination, and then our end goal is, of course, making it available to the public. We are an agency that's been directed to be self-sustaining to the fullest extent possible.
And we say self-sustaining, does that mean that, you know, what you produce, you guys are supposed to get money from in order to operate your
agency? Right, because we do not get an annual appropriation from Congress.
Okay.
So we are one of those groups within the government that for many, many years have been operating in a way that
almost
we are self-sustaining. And that's part of the culture, really. It has built a culture that is, first of all, very businesslike and very focused on the mission. And we pay a lot of attention to the cost of doing what we're doing. But we also pay a lot of attention to effectiveness. And as technology has changed over time, NTIS has had to change with it. And many cases have been on the front end of changing. And in some cases have had to catch up. So we've been very busy in the last couple of years making ourselves much more available and visible on the web,
okay,
for instance.
Okay.
We can talk more about that.
Sure. Now, you mentioned that you're collecting data. How does that go about? I mean, do you talk to every federal agency and that you maybe have a liaison for each of the federal agencies and you're, you know, asking them to provide data? And what kind of data are you collecting? And how is that whole, I mean, what are you putting it together? I mean, are you putting certain products together? What's going on with all that data?
And it's what makes, and it's one of the reasons NTIS is such an interesting place to work, because you do get an opportunity through the work to talk to people in agencies across the whole government. It was a surprise to me coming into NTIS 3.5 short years ago, the number of government agencies who produce scientific or technical information. So we work with the Department of Transportation, the Department of Energy, NASA. I'm going to leave somebody out and they're
sure.
going to be offended. But
no
basically,
problem.
You name an agency and it's highly likely we're interacting with them to collect
okay.
information. Now, good question. What information? Typically, what we're collecting are the results of federally performed or federally funded research. And research can, you know, a lot of times people hear research and they think of physics or they think of chemistry or biology. And that's all true, too. But the social sciences are sciences, too. So, for instance, we work with Census, which is a sister organization within the Department of Commerce. You think about all the statisticians
right.
and economists throughout the government and so forth. And what we're the form we're typically collecting are reports, fact sheets, white papers, et cetera. not necessarily published materials. So there's a category of material called gray literature if you're in the information industry. And it's that material that has been put out for the public, but it has not necessarily been peer-reviewed or produced into a scholarly journal.
Okay.
And that's really our
sweet
spot. So this
is more kind of like raw data that's being put out
in some
public,
it ranges from... Here's an example that people might not normally think of. We work with DEA and we work with Social Security. They produce a lot of information in raw data form for their own uses.
Okay.
But it has been proven to be useful to researchers for various reasons throughout the years. So NTIS has worked with those agencies, for instance, from the time that they were producing these files on a piece of paper. And we've worked with them to help migrate those files into information products that are more easily usable. So, for instance, today we offer, through a subscription, online searchable databases of materials that those agencies produce to make it easier for people to use.
So the agencies will subscribe to your databases in order to – is that how that works?
No, it's kind of the other way around. We are not – and I should have said this up front – we do not produce the information itself.
Okay.
So we're not a source agency for the information. So in the examples I just used, let's take DEA, for instance. A DEA is the source agency for the information. The other part of our mission, I talked about our mission of actually collecting the information and making it available and easily searchable to the public. We have another part of our mission. Congress has directed us to use those competencies and that kind of infrastructure we've built up over the years to do the former, to help other government agencies with their information dissemination. So the DEA is a good example of a little of both, because what we've done with that group through the years is they're the source of the information. We work with them and the information to put it into a form that's much easier for the people who want to use it to use it. So we take the raw data files.
So for their consumers and their stakeholders.
Right. So the users can be government agencies, but they're also mainly the source agencies. Our typical information user, now typical is probably not a good word, a lot of research, whether it's academic or corporate, or government of many kinds, researchers. That's really kind of the core of who uses our collection of technical reports. We've got over 2.5 million technical reports from the federal government that's been collected over 60 years worth of information from across the government. So when I say we make it easier for people to find things, one of the questions I often get, we at NTIS often get is, well, there's the internet. And there's search engines, so why, you know, what do you do beyond that? And that's a great, I love getting that question because it's an easy one for me to answer.
Because they don't realize there's so much massive amount of information.
Well, exactly. You know, we are all swimming in an ocean of information. And so information has moved from being a scarce to being almost ubiquitous. And so now the problem is helping people sort through and get to what they really need to make their decisions, or in the case of a researcher, maybe looking at what other people have done in the area so he or she can build on it instead of redoing. So we add value specifically by, A, making information easy to find by subject matter, by category. So when someone says, let me see what the federal government has done in the way of research on nanotechnology. They can come to the NTIS website, for instance. This is one use case. They can first do a free search because what we've done is put the metadata around all those reports and information which we've created or collected. We've put that online. We've put search features on top of them so they can search through. They can find however many pieces of information or technical reports we might have on that topic. They can do a little bit of digging using the metadata. And then if they choose to say, I want that entire report. And we're typically talking, you know, things can be from one page to 900 pages.
Right. It'd be almost a whole book.
It is, in fact, books.
And I've got one of your books in front of you right now. We'll talk about that in a minute.
All right. So then people can make a decision. I want this. Do I want it as an electronic download? Do I want it in some other form? People still buy microfiche, which again was coming into NTIS was a little bit of a surprise to me.
Sure.
You know, I pride myself on being an internet person and a search engine person. But there are very good reasons for people to continue to make decisions around getting something in other than just a download. And our philosophy is as long as we can produce in a cost-effective way, and in this case, cost-effective is determined by whether the client will pay for it, then we will continue to offer the media that the information user says they want.
We have to take a break, but when we return, I'll be talking more with Ellen Hurst, Director of the National Technical Information Service, about NTIS, its mission, her experience moving from the private sector to NTIS, careers at NTIS, and where the agency and the effective housing information is headed in the future. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Do you want to protect your assets for your heirs and keep them from the tax authorities and creditors? Are you interested in learning the latest techniques in maximizing your wealth? At Zelle Law, we're dedicated to helping our clients realize their personal dreams of wealth and freedom using the very latest tax, estate, and business planning methods. For more information, give us a call at 571-203-9355 or visit us on the web at zellelaw.com. Also, join me every Saturday morning at 7:30 here on 1500 AM.
Some people would rather spin a story to get your attention than tell the truth and challenge you to make things better. Instead of division, join an audience that believes in inclusion. It's our world, and we must be accountable for what we do while we are here. I'm Coach Lynn. Make a change, one listener at a time. Keep it tuned in here at 1500 and 820 AM, Sundays 7:30 to 8:30 AM. Prosper.
If you have $10,000 or more in credit card debt, this is the last commercial credit card companies want you to hear. Because we know the secrets of eliminating that debt by up to 60%, and we want to share those secrets with you. We're Credit and Debt Management of America, and if you call us right now, we'll give you the information that credit card companies try so desperately to hide. Information that will cut your debt fast, and we'll give it to you free. Call right now, 1-800-900-4701. Credit card companies want to keep you in debt so they can make themselves rich. As your debt spirals out of control, their pockets fill. So this is your best chance to give credit card companies the payback they deserve while you regain control of your debt, your life, your peace of mind. Find out how easy it is by calling for this must-have free information. Settle your debt now. Call 1-800-900-4701. That's 1-800-900-4701. 1-800-900-4701.
From the National Institutes of Health in Bethesda, Maryland, this is NIH Health Matters.
A recent study examining the link between exercise and cancer risk showed that not getting adequate sleep further affected a woman's cancer risk. Dr. James McLean at the National Cancer Institute says that among the most active women in the study, those that slept more than 7 hours were protected relative to those who slept less than 7 hours. However, he adds,
sleep in our study did not prevent you from getting cancer, so you can't just go and sleep more and reduce your risk of getting cancer.
For more on this study and other cancer research, visit www.cancer.gov.
NIH Health Matters is a production of the NIH Radio News Service from the National Institutes of Health, an agency of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just join me, you're listening to my interview with Ellen Hurst, Director of the National Technical Information Service. Going into the information user, and you kind of mentioned, and you touched on maybe some of who the users are, who are some of your customers, and it's seen as if academia, people and maybe research organizations, but who is the broad sense? Who are some of the people who are coming to your site and digging down and buying some of these reports from all this data that you're putting together?
Right, and when I was talking about users, I was really thinking about that technical report collection.
Okay.
But as you mentioned, we have a lot of other information products, many of them in book form, many of them in online databases that are subscribable. And in those cases, we get all kinds of users. So let me just describe a couple of the products and kind of the people who use them. I mentioned DEA. Let me continue with that example.
Okay.
The DEA produces a list of people who are authorized to prescribe controlled substances,
okay,
certain classes of drugs and so forth that you have to be cleared to be able to prescribe. Now, you wouldn't normally think of that as technical information, but it is. And who would use that? Well, pharmacies, formularies in hospitals, maybe insurance companies. So you start to look at some of the other forms of information and types of information we have, and all of a sudden you've opened up who would potentially use the information we have into a much broader basis than what you might typically think about as a research community.
Yeah.
Another example, banks, many financial institutions subscribe to other products that relate to information in their industry. So it's the information base is so broad. We therefore get to work with a lot of people, both the source agencies, but also working with customers across the board. It is never boring. Little anecdote, personal anecdote. When I came to NTIS, because I spent 25 years in the private sector before coming to NTIS.
And talk a little about your background before you came to NTIS. What did you do? Were you working in technology?
I was always in a technology company, but I'm an accountant and economist by trade, or by training rather. So I started out of school actually with Pricewaterhouse.
Okay.
Did a little bit of that. Spent most of my career at the DuPont Company. I'm a Delaware native, and I'm going to give a shout out to the Fightin' Blue Hens,
right,
who were featured in the parade. I was watching for the U of D marching band.
You have some pride at that moment, right?
I have a lot of pride. We all have a lot of pride from Delaware.
Yeah.
Worked for DuPont.
Okay.
In imaging technology. As a business person, not as a scientist, but always worked around scientists and technologists. Moved to Virginia about 12 years ago, went to work for a company that creates systems that detect counterfeiting.
Mm.
Very fascinating.
Okay.
And you can imagine some of the places you go that world. Did a few other things, did a couple of startups. And got to a point, and I don't want to sound maudlin or cheesy, but after 9/11, started to think about, I've been doing this a long time. I've been building shareholder wealth.
Right.
I've been making an awfully good living.
Right.
I need to do something else. And if I can tell another little personal anecdote.
Please do.
Thought about joining for the FBI.
Yeah.
And didn't realize that,
you make
you know, I was a little too old for just starting out.
I don't know. They may call you after this, though. they've got a lot of information challenges.
Yeah. I guess to broaden the experience, as someone who spent her entire career in the private sector,
mm-hmm.
With, building shareholder wealth and customer value as what I did for a living, and then said, what else can I do with those skills and experiences? I have found so much of that transferable into the government.
Right.
And maybe that's what I'd want to leave with private sector people, that, the government is about customer service. The government is about using funds wisely to accomplish your mission.
Right, right. Let me go into this too, because I think this is really important. And as you're being a director of an agency, because I always like to hear people's stories about how they got into an agency. Talk to me about, because you're at a certain level. Did you see the announcement out there? Did someone contact you? I mean, what was your experience in terms of getting into the government? Because I think people out there in the private sector who may be having this interest now, and a lot of people do have this interest, need to hear that. Yes, I spent 20 years in the private sector, got to a certain point, I'm ready for public service.
Right.
What was your story and what was your tips?
I had a lot of friends, obviously living in this area. I had a lot of friends who worked in the federal government in various agencies, and kind of let it be known that I was thinking of making a career change, and talked for long periods of time to people about where my skill sets might fit. And although I just said I have found my skills and experiences very transferable, obviously I had no background in an appropriated environment, a highly regulated environment. So actually, when I started looking seriously and on advice of friends, I actually looked for places where I felt my experience was more directly transferable. And actually, a friend brought to my attention that there was this posting on this thing called USA Job, which, again, was brand new to me,
just like it is
to anybody else looking today. And I thought it looked very interesting and did some homework because NTIS, even at that point, had a lot of their information on the web.
And this is an SES posting, right?
It's a career senior executive posting, right? An appointment. And I actually looked at all of the information I could find about NTIS on the website and said, okay, this is one where I think I can add value and I think it'd be a heck of a lot of fun. And then I started the process of applying.
The ECQs and all the other things.
And actually, again, one piece of advice I would have is take advantage of your neighbors who are in the government who can, even if they're not SESers, they can give you some background on how this process works, what you can expect in terms of time frames, even to hear from someone at all. Because I think that can be discouraging to someone who might be used to a much quicker process.
In the private sector.
And again, the private sector isn't always quick either. Right. But, you know, just understanding the process and having some expectation.
You just have a 30-page document that you got to turn in if possible.
I was very impressed, actually, with what you had to do to even apply as an SES candidate. It was the most thorough process of forcing the applicant to describe truly the skills and abilities that were direct, not just the ECQs, but then the technical quals.
A good vetting process.
It is an excellent vetting process. And now that I've been on the other side and been on panels to review applications and panels to do interviewing, I can tell people that although it's a very daunting process, I think it's an excellent and disciplined process, at least what I've experienced on both sides of it. I have to say I don't know all the details of how my application was vetted and eventually got to the interview process. I do know, after the fact, having been told, that the people who were looking for applicants were specifically looking for someone with a business background.
Okay.
And again, if you think about NTIS having to kind of make its way on its own to the extent feasible by being a cost recovery organization, it makes sense that someone who had some profit and loss background or knew their way around a financial statement, understood cost drivers, understood how to build value in an environment where you have to earn the money from your customers to get the money to provide value.
Right.
So that all made sense to me. I had an excellent interview panel.
How long did your process take from kind of beginning to end, from the point in which you put your application in to the point in which you...
I'm going to have to make another confession here now, too. I believe that the posting closed in October of 2004.
Okay.
I received a call in, I want to say, maybe February. And it was a call from an HR person. And I had to ask the person what the job was. Because, again...
You had been kind of putting things out
like
different places.
Well, I hadn't put that many things out, but it was... I wasn't used to, even though people had told me to expect. I really didn't understand that some of these things can go
for a long
period of time. Sure. So I had kind of been like, by Christmas, I hadn't heard a word, and I thought, oh, well,
keep
on doing what I'm doing and maybe look for another opportunity someday. So I had to ask the person what the job was. And then I thought, well, that has really messed up any chance I have of getting the job. They're thinking,
well, apparently,
you know, was called in for an interview.
Okay.
And it was a 3-person panel of career SESs. The hiring person at that time was the Undersecretary for Technology Administration.
Okay.
So the interview panel apparently made their recommendation. And then I had an interview with the undersecretary, and I was offered the job on April 1st, because I'll never forget when they called. I thought, is this an April Fool's joke? because of the position I had at the company I worked for, I needed to give a significant amount of notice. I was a a principal in a company. Right. Right. And so I didn't start until July of 05.
And you had to go through the clearance process and everything else.
Right.
Too.
Which, again, I had been through portions of that in the private sector. So that part itself wasn't all that surprising. But I guess for people who haven't been, again, long application to fill out, lots and lots of information going back many years, fingerprinting, all those kinds of things. So,
and, you know, I wanted people to hear that story because I just want them to know that it's possible.
Yes.
You know, for them to get in at a senior level, at a 15 or at a SES level from private sector after spending years and years in private sector. You can't make that transition.
Now, if I can also speak to the other side, though, I think you have to be, you have to do your homework. Mm-hmm. I have now sat on the other side where I've been on enough application review panels and enough interview panels now. Mm-hmm. When you start seeing the same resume come up for multiple jobs, obviously you look at it within the context of the job that's being applied for and you evaluate it versus that. But I look at it and I say, I know how much time it takes to put together a good application. And you really want to treat it like you would any other business activity and really do your homework and learn enough about the job and the agency and the mission that you're targeting wisely.
Right. Not just putting in for any job.
Right. And, we're seeing, as I'm sure every other agency is seeing, with the economy being what it is, when we do have a posting, we've seen a huge increase in the number of applicants for any job. Jobs ranging from entry-level material handlers, because we have a warehouse and we actually
As a matter of fact, we'll just go into this.
Let's talk a little bit about careers. At NTIS. So what kind of careers are available at NTIS? First of all, we have accounting. We have finance. We have a warehouse. We have warehousing and distribution. And we do that both for ourselves, but we also do it on behalf of other clients. So we have material handling and distribution specialist positions, inventory control positions. We have significant IT presence. We have moved ourselves completely onto the web for searching, for finding, for delivery, as well as other methods I've talked about. And we help other government agencies go through that process as well. So we have all the typical IT specialist type of jobs. We have education and outreach people, and these are the people that go out to both agencies that have that material. You asked before, how do we collect this material? And I never really answered you. Well, back before the internet, we had many, many, many more people whose sole job it was to go out and knock on doors and work with source agency people. Okay. We still have some people that do that.
Now, is there a mandate that they have? Is it required?
Yes. It's called the American Technology Preeminence Act. Okay. And that requires government agency to deposit with NTIS, whether electronically or however, a copy of this information. And I like to say that the onus is on us because there's no ATPA police. And it's an that's why we call it education and outreach, both to the source of information. And also over time, of course, agencies have changed the way they collect, hold, and disseminate information on their own. So the people and the methodologies have changed. We do a lot of harvesting of websites today.
Okay.
We do a lot of work with people.
Government and non-government?
Government only.
Oh, government only. Okay.
I'm sorry, I should have said that. We do have a mandate to collect related international information.
Okay.
But we stick pretty much with government information. I should have said unclassified as well. We don't deal with classified information. But so we're working a lot with people who are also dealing with storage of electronic information. We have a group that creates metadata. Metadata is what it's called today. In the library world, it's called bibliographic information.
If
we can all remember our library cards that have now been replaced by online searchable databases. While we gather that information from the source agency when it's available, many times it's not available, or it's not available as completely as we would like to see to make it easier for people to find it based on our experience with users. So we have a group of people who are trained in or skilled at a library type of work, cataloging and indexing. We have product managers. And again, this might be directly transferable from a private sector standpoint. Real product managers whose job it is to look at the information we're collecting, look at ways to put it together so that it's more easily available to the public, that we add value to it, et cetera.
We have to take a break, but when we return, I'll be talking more with Ellen Hirst, Director of the National Technical Information Service, about the work of NTIS. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Here's Robert Carey, Chief Information Officer, Department of the Navy, on the Federal Executive Forum on Cybersecurity, sponsored by Juniper Networks.
So I think that the future is going to be met with our ability to manage that risk. I don't think we'll ever quite always be ahead and be able to stand there with a straight face and say that we're going to be ahead of the threat completely, but we'll be able to manage the risk appropriately.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Need to expand your network security against cyber attacks and ensure that your employees and partners can still access the information and applications they need quickly and securely? Juniper Networks protects vital networks and applications across the federal government and around the world, from the core to the edge. Juniper high-performance networking and security solutions can protect your network from malicious attack and internal misuse. Visit Juniper on the web at www.juniper.com.
Tune in every third and fourth Wednesday of the month at 1 p.m. for Federal CFO Insights. Federal CFO Insights gives you greater insight into the world's leading strategies for tackling your biggest challenges. Get up-close perspectives and learn the leading practices of federal CFOs and members of the private sector on the important issues impacting government today. Tune in every third and fourth Wednesday of the month at 1 p.m. to hear Federal CFO Insights on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit. Presented by NITP has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 AM Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
What if I said you could erase your wrinkles, tighten your skin, and make frown lines disappear from view, all without surgery or injections? With all the creams you've tried, you're probably skeptical. So I'm going to prove it to you by sending you a free trial of a scientific breakthrough called hydroxytone. Shed years from your appearance faster than you ever thought possible.
I looked at her and I was just, wow, she looked so young.
I told her I couldn't believe how smooth her face looks. She's lost, what, 10 years at least?
Request your risk-free trial of this proven breakthrough today. The results are so impressive. Hydroxytone was given away in VIP gift bags at international film festivals.
She always looked good to me, but now I can't believe how young she looks.
Call now for your free trial of hydroxytone. For a limited time, try it before you buy it. 1-800-400-3202. But hurry. When this offer's gone, it's gone. Call 1-800-400-3202. 1-800-400-3202.
Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just join me, you're listening to my interview with Ellen Hirst, Director of the National Technical Information Service. You've got this statistical abstract of the United States, the 2009. I'm sure you got a product manager on this because I saw the press release about
it. Yes, we
do. I mean, and this is one of the products that you guys, that your agency is basically providing to the public. I mean, talk to me, because I do want to get into some of I start looking through your database, and I saw just, wow, just interesting,
all kinds of things.
A massive amount of information,
yes,
and reports and
right,
all this, you know. I mean, you could have a field day in there and just
exactly
have a good time. Talk to me about this right here.
Okay,
this book.
The Statistical Abstract, or StatAbs, as we call it, which is a book that's put out periodically. It's also, the information is available online as well. People still buy the book, and that's a good example of, depending on how someone's going to use the information, it's really their choice as to what media works
right
for them.
Right.
And this is a great example of work, everything from working with the source agency, which is the Census Bureau in this case. So we work with them very closely and cooperatively to get that book out to the public. We also, this is a good example of our public-private partnership. we don't rely just on ourselves to be the sole dissemination point for this information. We have been both directed by mandate and also allowed to create public-private partnerships. So what form do they take? They can be everything from working with an existing reseller of books or databases or so forth to just resell or make the information available to the public as part of something else they do. Maybe one of the more unique authorities we have is the authority to enter into joint ventures. So we can work with a private sector company to enhance a product or a technology out to the public, and we both share in the value that creates. So that is one great example. But as you said, 2.5 million technical reports, 3 million distinct information products right. available. One of our jobs is to make all the people out there who we think might have a use for one or more of our products aware that we exist, aware of the very range. That's ntis.gov, by the way. Should have said that at the top.
That's ntis.gov.
I'll need to say that three more times, or my product managers will be mad at me when
we'll
I get back.
Make sure you get to him before you go.
The other thing we've done, and this goes back to what I said about, obviously, as technology has changed and as technology has caused user behavior to change, we, along with every other information provider, have had to change. So 60% of people use search engines. Some of the studies I've seen say 80% of professional science engineer technologists go to a search engine first, which is startling. And it's something to be ignored at the peril of an information provider.
Right.
So we've worked particularly over the last 3.5 years.
Most people are really focused on open source right now.
Right. And, you know, you can choose to fight the user and you'll lose.
Right.
Or you can choose to go with the user and be available where they want you to be available. So we have worked very cooperatively with all the search engine protocols to make sure that when someone is searching using the technology they prefer to use, we show up. And this brings up an issue that I know as a member of Sendy, I've talked about a lot now.
Sendy
is a government group. It's a voluntary group of science, technology, information managers and senior managers from across the government.
Okay.
There are about 13 agencies right now that participate, and we meet about 6 times a year, and we gather to discuss best practices in science, technology, information management, look at resources in terms of who's doing what and can others make best use of that, look at common issues, and so forth. So it's a collection of people who spend all day long thinking about science and technology information, how to manage it within the government,
right.
how to manage it, how to make it more easily available to the right. public. And some people may have heard of this thought that a lot of government information isn't readily available. There's a number of reasons for it. You mentioned open source, which has to do more with copyright and publishers right. and things like that. Another reason is a lot of information is in databases that the current search engine technology does not access through its crawler technology. Mm. And so Sendy, for instance, many of us, I think all of us actually, have worked with the search engine people to find ways to open up those databases where we can. Now, of course, some of these databases have classified information
right.
and so forth
sure.
in it. But where it's information that the public has, you know, should have available, we've worked hard with the industry to open those databases up.
We have to take a break, but when we return, I'll be talking more with Ellen Hirst, Director of the National Technical Information Service, about the work of NTIS. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Oh, great, Guru. I've climbed this mountain in hopes that you can help me here. How can I contain IT costs without sacrificing performance or scalability or security?
Follow the sun.
Huh?
It's powering the data center, causing your energy bills to skyrocket.
Oh, yes, yes.
Well, follow the sun.
Why?
Precisely, whyfollowthesun.com.
Oh, yes, whyfollowthesun.com. Oh, wait, you mean I could have done this in the comforts of my own office?
Whyfollowthesun.com.
Well, how do I get down from here?
You could take the elevator.
This is Rynthia Rost, Vice President of Geico Insurance Company, urging you to give the gift of a membership fee to a child this year at your local Boys and Girls Clubs. Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington supplies a safe haven, targeted programming, caring adult mentors, and educational activities to youth who would otherwise be home alone or on the streets. Log on to bgcgw.org and click on Donate Now to see how you can help. This message is brought to you by GEICO and Bonneville International.
Listen to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, every Friday morning at 11. Brought to you by the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, Vayu, and Roth. Fed Talk features live interviews with guests from the federal community sharing their insights on issues that affect you. Call in or email questions or comments to fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. Fed Talk is sponsored by GEICO. Hosts Deborah Roth and Kate Fulton will be joined by John Adler, National President, and Nate Katura, Executive Vice President, with an update for the federal law enforcement community from FLIOA.
When your family wants to take in local college basketball, you don't need a federal bailout, a full tank of gas, or a second mortgage to enjoy a great night out. Put on your red, white, and blue and buy American. That's right, American University basketball. Tickets are affordable, parking is free, and every seat is a great one in Bender Arena. 202-885-TIXX or online at AUEagles.com. Buy American.
Newsmakers make news on Federal News Radio.
Karen Evans from the Office of Management and Budget, you told Jason Miller that you were going to practice Guitar Hero now that you're retiring. Is this harder than testifying before the Senate?
Yes. It's hard. Oh, I got booed! Oh. I told you, go to commercial before I get booed off.
No, you know, it's fine.
In Depth with Francis Rose, weekday afternoons from 1 to 3, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
While you're at work, decisions are being made about how you do your job, now and in the future. What sort of new regulations will dictate how your agency fulfills its mission? Listen every weekday afternoon from 3 until 7 for the Daily Debrief with Chris Dorabeck and Amy Morris. They bring you the latest news and explain how it will impact your world. Chris and Amy ask the questions you would ask. The Daily Debrief with Chris Dorabeck and Amy Morris. Weekday afternoons from 3 to 7 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.
Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just join me, you're listening to my interview with Ellen Hertz, Director of the National Technical Information Service.
President Obama came out very strong and said that he's going to make sure that government is open, accessible, transparent. This seems to have a lot that goes on with your mission.
Absolutely.
Where do you think we're going to head with that? How do you guys feel about this mission of making government more open and transparent and making sure this information is out there? And what's going to be NTIS involvement or even Cindy's involvement?
Well, and of course, we feel like we've been involved because sure. This is our mission. And the other agencies and people represented at the Cindy meetings are also people whose mandate it is to get that information readily available to the public. Science builds on the past. You know, I think it was Isaac Newton or Blaise Pascal, it's questionable who said it first, but said that, you know, I stand on the shoulders of giants.
Right.
So it is imperative that scientific and technical information be available to make best use both of the money that taxpayers have spent already on that information, creating that information. This is all government-funded science and right. technology.
Right.
Taxpayers have already paid for this,
right.
the creation of this information. We need to make sure it's preserved and it's available easily findable to the people who need it. It's part of making us more competitive. You know, science and technology are a big part of what has made the U.S. competitive and will keep us competitive, as President That's right. has often said. And we've got to make sure this information is available so that next dollar we spend in funding science and technology is taking full advantage of all the dollars that we've spent before that.
Right.
So as you can probably tell, I'm personally very passionate about this. The people in our agency are very passionate about this. And the people that I know in the science and technology information community are also very passionate about this. This is our life's work. This is how we contribute to the public good.
And is the main challenge what you just mentioned about just the old databases and that old information and finding a way, whether it be putting them in PDF form or putting them in some kind of format that can be put into a search engine that makes it searchable, downloadable, and be able to put them in books? Is that the main challenge?
Oh, Derek, you just hit one of my hot buttons and one of the hot buttons in the community. Legacy information that is was never digital to begin with and must be made digital to make it more visible. Again, to a user who is used to thinking that if I can't find it online, it must not exist.
It must not be there, yeah.
Now, that's a bit of an overstatement, but more and more we're seeing that in user behavior. I'll just give you an example. I mentioned earlier we've been collecting for 60 years, and we have information that goes back further than that. So we have some information that goes back into the late 1800s. There are resources to obviously to digitize that information and make it available in digital form. And if I can say, that's one of the struggles that I think the STI management community is having right now is how do we make best use of the resources we've been given to march as quickly as we can through those back files to get all that information. Sometimes I have people say,
there's more money that's needed or more funding from either Congress or somewhere to, you know, help in that process?
It's a tough question for me to answer. let me try to answer it this way. And I'll go back to what I said earlier. The taxpayers have paid to create this information. To the extent it is not then available for the next person to use to make progress, it's kind of a waste. Not a complete waste, but we're not taking best advantage of what we've already paid for. And again, having come out of the private sector, having an MBA, you know, I look at these things as patent and trademark office resources, scientific resources, of course. I think there's a pretty easy case to be made from an ROI standpoint on saying, how do we most effectively, and that's the big question, is how do you use dollars wisely, especially now when we have so many things that we need to fund? How do we work with the private sector, work with other components of the public sector, but how do we get this stuff out there more quickly than just kind of trudging through it on our own?
Sure.
And that's a topic that my fellow STI managers talk about probably on a daily basis.
With your agency, the uniqueness of it, where you have to sustain profitability,
Profitability, cost recovery.
Well, okay, cost recovery, okay.
We're not making a profit.
Right. Okay. You have to equal out. The dollars have to equal out.
Right.
I mean, with that model, and that's an interesting model, and I think few agencies have it.
It's a tough model.
It's a tough model.
Yeah.
I mean, are you guys able to sustain that with the products you have? I mean, you know, do you have enough consumers who are buying your products where you do equal out?
We have been able to do that. And of course, that's one of the things we have to report on regularly. If we ever were not to do that, I would have to be making a lot of phone calls and so forth right away. That's part of my responsibility. It's gotten tougher every year. But then the challenge becomes for us, are we adding value? You know, if we're not adding value, then people aren't going to pay for it, particularly if they can find a way somehow to get the same information for free. It might take them a little longer. So that's always our test of ourselves. What are we doing every day to add value as new technology is bringing more value into that whole information user experience? How do we stay relevant? So moving information through technology cycles, adding value. You know, some people look at what we do with metadata and go, gosh, that's kind of old-fashioned. You know, right. What are you talking about, adding bibliographic information? Well, how do you think people find things?
Right, that's the key.
And everything from, you know, not just having a PDF of the document, but making it optical character readable. So you can do a search of the whole document, or you can read an abstract, or you can, we've created vertical search environments by creating subject categories where people can just go in and go, let me look at this category, see what's in there. So it's the question we have to ask ourselves every day, because every day we have to earn our own living, so to speak.
You have been listening to my interview with Ellen Hirsch, Director of the National Technical Information Service, about the work of NTIS. Tune in next week for the final part of this interview as I talk to Director Hirsch about the Deaf Master File, the World News Connection, and other products and services NTIS provides. Remember, you can always reach me at FedAccess@FederalNewsRadio.com. So if you have any questions you want answered, people in the government sector you want to hear from, comments, or show ideas, email me at FedAccess@FederalNewsRadio.com. Take care, and I'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch, Thursday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.
News Radio 1500 AM is the home of the Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Jane Norris. Weekday mornings from 6 to 10, Tom and Jane navigate the world of the RFIs, RFPs, circulars, executive orders, and regulations for you, the federal manager and contractor, and deliver news, perspective, and analysis in plain language to make your agency and company more efficient. Tom and Jane speak to newsmakers and analysts live to get to the details on the latest mission-critical news and information. The Federal Drive is federal news from the inside up. The Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Jane Norris. Weekday mornings from 6 to 10, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Your source for federal news now.
Monthly payment calculation assumes 5% down at 7% APR over 30 years.
Well, here it is, my very own house. What do you think?
It's huge.
4 bedrooms, 2 baths. And get this, I pay less for the mortgage than I did for rent.
No way. How?
I called CRN and found this great home.
This can't be a foreclosure. It's brand new.
Imagine finding a beautiful 3-bedroom home for $10,000. That's less than $75 a month. To learn how to receive a free list of foreclosures, call 1-800-700-9182 now. You could own a house for less than you pay in rent. And due to recent housing legislation, first-time homebuyers who buy a property before July 1, 2009 can get a $7,500 tax credit. Properties go fast, so call in the next 30 minutes to learn how to receive a free foreclosure list. 1-800-700-9182.
So to get my own home, I just need this list?
You just need the list.
To learn how to receive a free list of foreclosures, call CRN now. 1-800-700-9182. 1-800-700-9182.
I want to change some things. I want the moms where I live to have childcare they can trust.
I want to make sure my little brother and his friends have a safe place to play.
I want to help more kids graduate from high school.
Help more hardworking families learn how to budget and save.
I want more of my neighbors to have access to health care.
Want to make a difference? There are so many ways you can. Help create opportunities for everyone in your community.
I want to change what I see around here.
United Way is creating real, lasting change where you live by focusing on the building blocks of a better life, education, income, and health.
I mean, I just want to see more smiles on my sidewalks.
Reach out a hand to one and influence the condition of all. Give, advocate, volunteer. Live United. For more, visit United Way at liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
This week on Meet the Innovators, brought to you by Google, we spoke with Stanford Law Professor Lawrence Lessig.
The central principle about inspiring innovation is to recognize the smartest people don't work for you. And that's especially important for the government to recognize because it's certainly the case that the smartest people, you know, spread across the whole economy and aren't going to populate themselves all inside the government.
Bring innovation to your agency with Google. Google's federal team provides innovative technologies the government can use for search, mapping, collaboration, and email security. Visit google.com/federal to learn how these cost-effective technologies can help your agency's employees and customers. Google's enterprise products deliver results fast, just like Google. Put Google Search, Google Maps, Google Earth, and Google Apps to work for your agency. Learn more at google.com/federal.
Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.